Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Shop the Sherwin-Williams Memorial Day Sale and get 30% off paints and stains May 15th through the 28th. Whether you're refreshing your interior or exterior, we've got the colors to bring your vision to life. And with delivery, getting everything to your door is easier than ever. Shop online to have it delivered or visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details. Delivery available on qualifying orders.
Welcome into Morning Drive here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley alongside Joe Rexroad from The Athletic. Marquise Munson behind the glass. Fellas, how's it going? Joe, how's it going, man?
Good. How are you?
Not bad. Marquise, what's going on, brother?
I'm good.
Good.
No, I'm not good. No, I'm not good. Alabama lost to Vandy.
Yeah, that's good.
And let's just get it started right now. This is just a travesty. Yeah. I almost went Stephen A. Smith right there.
Yeah, you did.
This is a travesty. This is the worst thing that ever happened to college basketball since Will Wade.
The last time Alabama lost.
Yeah, I'm joking. Saban Lee, man, 38 points.
Yeah. Kudos to that guy.
On your Tide.
That's pretty good.
6 of 7 from three. That's the outlier, but man, he is becoming a really good player.
Big win last night for the Vols, too, against Kentucky. Against all odds, down in the first half.
Huge. Huge win.
I can't figure out this Tennessee team for the life of me.
Well, they're...
figure out college basketball for the life of me.
No, that's a good point.
And speaking of college basketball, since we're going through the really good night, Lipscomb, huge win in the quarters of the A-Sun.
Hey, buddy.
Beats Florida Gulf Coast. Move on to the semis Thursday, I believe, at North Florida. And then, you know, if they got to Sunday, they would play Liberty, the team they played in the championship game last year, lost in a heartbreaker, also the team that they upset just last weekend. So, I mean, the idea that Lipscomb could have a chance here to get a bid, that's pretty crazy when you think about, you know, a rebuild. Casey Alexander goes to Belmont. Lenny Acuff has a totally new team, but Asan Asajila had 40 points last night. Special player.
Absolutely.
Big hoops night.
Big hoops night in our area. And a big hockey night in our area as well. We'll get to that here in just a few minutes. But I wanted to touch base after the show we had yesterday, just kind of taking everybody through what had happened in our community the night before, the morning of, with the tornado outbreak. I think the latest count that I saw, 24 confirmed dead. At one point, there was a report out there that 77 people in Putnam County were unaccounted for. I think that's now been dwindled down to 38 after people shared the names and people were found.
And some people think
response. Yeah, you know, they, you know, say, hey, we found so and so. So, still prayers for 38 people that are still unaccounted for, because that's a terrifying situation. Just basically a nightmare of a day yesterday in our community. Just as the day continued to unfold, to watch, you know, live coverage of the devastation. I went home from the show yesterday, and I got home, and my wife and I were just kind of sitting there all day, just watching, you know, the news reports of people walking around East Nashville. I mean, there's streets and neighborhoods that I grew up on, and I can remember running around with my friends playing on that, you know, are unrecognizable now. Just a crazy day yesterday.
Yeah, and you know, some individual stories in there. And honestly, you know, this happens at other times with my wife and I. There were a couple, you know, stories with young kids who lost their lives here. And I'm just like, I can't, like right now, I can't deal with it. You know, I mean, this is a conversation my wife and I have at times, because she, you know, reads about things and there's so many, there's news reports, but also there's things on social media that you can find, and pictures and people sharing things, and there's just obviously a lot of really, really sad stories, tragic loss of life here, which still is the bottom line. The response of everyone was exactly as I thought it would be.
Yeah.
It's been great, and it's going to be great, and we are going to get through this and be stronger. But the tragic loss of life is still the thing that, to me, is hard to get past right now.
There's no question about it. And just watching the stories unfold yesterday, I mean, you had, you know, I remember a father coming on Fox 17 saying, you know, he was out of town. I think his teenage daughter and her boyfriend were back at the house along with his family. And, you know, they were on the phone while it happened. And then all of a sudden you can't get in contact with your family anymore and you fear the worst. He was 5 hours away, immediately drove back at 1:30 in the morning to get back to Nashville and come back to a house that's no longer there. Now, his family, thankfully, was okay, but it's things like that that, you know, even, you know, the loss of life and the loss of property. And they interviewed a bunch of business owners in the Five Points area, in the Germantown area yesterday, that don't really know where to go from here now because they're still in just shock of the utter devastation that's taken place in our community.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, an entire street, essentially.
Yeah.
Gone. And I know quite a few people, I know you do too, you know, in East Nashville who were spared, but by like a block,
yeah,
you know, or a couple blocks. And I thought that obviously we've talked about the first responders and how you can't possibly express your gratitude enough to them. Mm-hmm. I also thought our leaders really did a good job yesterday. I think Governor Lee and Mayor Cooper, I mean, you know, they had frequent updates. They got information out that was important. They answered questions and got a lot of them and had good answers for them. And I thought they handled it really well. I thought we came off, you know, really organized and mobilized and ready for this. And I appreciate that too.
Yeah, I did too. And, you know, as we kind of move on here throughout this week, you know, cleanup efforts are going to begin. Restoration, hopefully, is going to begin. I know, you know, my church, you know, sent out this massive email yesterday of an organization that we're trying to put together to get going and get relief efforts started in East Nashville, in Germantown, in Mount Juliet, Lebanon, all over the place, maybe going out to Putnam County as well, trying to help there this weekend. So I'm sure a lot of people will be trying to do that. I know a lot of friends have texted me asking about, you know, what can we do to help? You know, do you know of any things going on out there that we can join? And that, to your point, Joe, I mean, I think we all expected that when this happened and this devastation hit our community. This is just how our community responds to things like this. And it's been, you know, obviously you never want to see something like this happen. I mean, that goes without saying. But it is, I think, a hidden bright spot of our community that, unfortunately, when things like this do happen, you know, our community typically responds in the right way, and they did yesterday for sure.
Yeah, that's another thing that Mayor John Cooper, I think it was John Cooper who said we shared the HON.org website, Hands on Nashville, and apparently he said it crashed three times yesterday. So you don't want it to crash, but there you go. That's an indication of people really wanting to get involved and help out.
And Munson, you said yesterday, you know, you're talking about your experience in Tuscaloosa and how, you know, regardless of if you were an Auburn fan, LSU fan, whatever the case was, I mean, all those rivalries got put to the side. Similar thing yesterday in the NHL. I mean, Chicago Blackhawks, they donated a portion of their 50-50 raffle. I think Minnesota donated $50,000.
Of course, Craig Leopold.
Craig Leopold used to be the owner here. Just a really good response yesterday. I thought league-wide in the NHL, Barry Trotz came out and had some comments yesterday from Morning Skate in New York talking about, you know, just his thoughts and prayers being with the community here in Nashville. So a really cool response by the league as a whole. I think the NHL also donated $50,000 to relief efforts here in Nashville. So really cool. That's kind of an area where sports, you know, you have these rivalries. At the end of the day, they don't really mean much. Like, I mean, this is a ton bigger than hockey, a ton bigger than sports. But these are the good things that can come out of sports and out of competition when tragedy strikes.
Yep, no doubt. And, you know, sports is a diversion and an escape. And, you know, I think it's nice to be able to have that. But also when heavy, serious stuff happens, typically the sports world responds just like that, and it was great to see.
Yeah, sports is very petty, especially the NBA. Yeah. So when stuff happens, though, they all come together. Because look, there's rivalries throughout basketball, you know, NBA, college basketball, whatever it is, and yet people all still come together once things happen. Like we saw that with Kobe's death, and we saw how close the NBA got and everything they did, you know, surrounding that. And then they went right back to, you know, normal scheduled program where Marcus Morris gets ejected from a Memphis Grizzlies game. So it goes to show that, you know, look, this is all one brotherhood. We're all playing on different teams, but at the end of the day, we all play in the same league. And so we saw a lot of that yesterday with the NHL and a lot of people just reaching out. So that was a good thing. And that's always a reminder of like, hey, these guys are competitive on the court, but off of it, you know, off the ice, off the court, off the field, you know, it's kind of a close-knit brotherhood, except if you're the Houston Astros, because then they hate you.
Yeah.
Regardless.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. But hey, you know what? Of course, Houston had terrible flooding a couple of years ago.
Did.
But, you know, if something happened in Houston, the whole league would respond to Houston, too.
Yeah,
you know,
and then put their differences aside,
right.
And then, you know, they'll stop trying to peg Alex Bregman, and then all of a sudden they'll move on.
Yes. Joe, one of the things that, you know, you were watching the coverage yesterday, and we'll kind of wrap up on this with this thought. The straight line that this thing went in, I don't know if I've ever seen a storm quite like that. I mean, you're talking about, I think, from the one that stretched through the Mount Juliet area, Donaldson, Mount Juliet, all the way to Cookeville. I mean, you're talking about over 100 miles of just a straight path there. It was unbelievable. I think the weather service has come out and said the one in Germantown was an EF2. The one in East Nashville that went into Donaldson and Mount Juliet, at least an EF3. And I don't think they've come out with one for Putnam County yet. Like, you know, that's just initial estimates. I mean, I think you're talking bare minimum at that point.
Yeah, it's terrifying.
It is.
And it's just... Yeah, no, especially Cookeville, of course, and Putnam County, the damage. And that was one of the, you know, 24 hours ago we're in here and, you know, we're seeing a lot of the initial images from East Nashville, Germantown. You know, it was later in the day for me that a lot of the stuff from there came out.
Yeah.
I mean, unbelievable. And you're right, it was just like just rip through for such a long stretch of, I'm no expert on this, but listening to people who are talk about this, you know, this was an outlier. This was a very rare occurrence.
Yeah. So tough day for our community. It's going to be a tough, you know, weeks and months for our community. But the encouraging part for me was to see how everybody responded yesterday, how the NHL responded yesterday and helped out the Predators. And now, as a community, we can try to heal. We can try to move on and help people who may be struggling. And I think it goes without saying all of us will try to do that as the week continues to progress here. When we come back, there was a hockey game last night that was very important for the Nashville Predators, and it didn't go very well. We'll talk about that next. You're listening to Morning Drive with Robbie Stanley and Joe Rexroad here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Welcome back into Morning Drive here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley alongside the great Joe Rexroad from The Athletic taking you through this Wednesday morning here in Nashville, Tennessee. It was a big game for the Nashville Predators last night on the road against the Minnesota Wild. And heading into the game, Joe, the Preds had a one-point lead on the Wild. So you knew, you know, win this game in regulation, you're 3 points clear of the Wild. You lose this game in regulation, you're 1 point behind the Wild. Well, unfortunately for the Predators, things didn't go very well in Minnesota last night. A 3-1 loss to the Minnesota Wild. Winnipeg wins as well last night, and now you look at the standings, and the Predators, who had held on to that second wild card spot, are now behind both Winnipeg and Minnesota in the standings, and Minnesota has played the same amount of games they've played. So a huge swing last night in the opposite direction for the Predators, and I didn't think, quite frankly, they played very well at all.
Yeah, like, you know, you always feel like the first goal is big, but I wasn't that impressed. I didn't detect this angry, you know, determined team to make up for you know the embarrassment of the night before.
Yeah.
And I know it's a back to back, so there's some physics involved there. It's tough to play a back-to-back on the road, but it wasn't I thought it wasn't like a terrible performance. I thought they were okay. They had some moments, they had some chances. You know, that Saros, they had, you know, some big kills in the second period. You know, Saros had some, you know, big moments, but overall just kind of not good enough.
Not good enough. Cunning with the goal on a play where, you know, it's one of those things where sometimes the puck just either hops on you or you just take off without it. And Matthias Ekholm, he wasn't very good on that first goal. Fabro was kind of swinging around the net, I guess expecting the outlet pass. And then Ekholm flubbed the puck, turned it over. And then once that was happening, I mean, Cunningham was all by himself. He could have pitched a tent in front of the net there. It was basically a slam dunk, just like the first goal against Edmonton was. Not much the goaltender can do in that situation. And then Kevin Fiala. We knew that he was on a heater. He had a goal and an assist last night. Just playing really well right now for the Wild. The goal he scored to give the Wild a 2-0 lead, I mean, it was real pretty. I thought Ryan Ellis, defending it, did about as good of a job as you could have hoped he could have done. But Fiala, just really good patience on that play, and roofs it over UC Saros. He's playing really well right now.
Yeah, Fiala, for people who remember him, I think he was probably, other than Forsberg, probably about as streaky a player as they had. And again, a guy who, when he gets going, you know, a month here or there, it's something like, get out of the way. It's special to watch, and that's where he is right now. So, you know, that trade of a year ago kind of coming back around. Now, of course, you know, both sides right now are happy with the guys they got in that trade, because Granlund's been Nashville's best forward since John Hines took over. But that can't be fun for the Preds to not just lose this game and flip-flop in the standings, but to see Kevin Fiala do that to them.
And I thought for sure, and we talked about this a little bit, Joe, I thought for sure last night that heading into that game, Kevin Fiala, with the streak that he had been on, the way he was playing, sometimes there's a little bit, I think, overconfidence in his game. And I thought for sure last night, going up against his old team, just knowing the way that Fiala is, he'd try to get out there and go 1-on-3, do all those things that sometimes drove Predators fans absolutely nuts here in Nashville, where you're trying to make the highlight reel play, and then he ends up turning it over like 6 times. Not credited with a giveaway. I think he did have a couple in that game. I'll credit him with a couple if the people in Minnesota don't want to do it. I have no problem taking that mantle. But not as reckless last night as I thought he would be. He didn't. Maybe the maturity in his game is starting to come around a little bit.
Maybe. He's not Kevin Fialander anymore.
Yeah. Oh, that was good.
Fialander?
Oh, yeah.
He might need to
trademark that.
he didn't play outside himself. So, he was always, I think we all thought, like, this kid's got a ton of talent.
A ton of skill. He really does.
So maybe it's all coming together for him and a little bit for them at the Preds' expense. So, really disappointing that you lose 3 straight now when you get yourself into position. You know, it was a great week or whatever it was while it lasted. The Preds, but, you know, they're right there. But now you got to deal with Dallas 2 games in a row. Not a matchup that has been very favorable for the Preds lately.
It is not. We're going to talk about that coming up here in just a little bit as to how much that can really swing this week and where they are in the race. Joe, one of the things that stood out to me last night in this game, and I think at times has been symptomatic of some of the fight issues on this team, and I'm not talking about the physical fist fight, just, you know, the pushback. Dante Fabro last night gets hurt on a play where UC Saros basically just gets bowled over by Jordan Greenway. I mean, it's a goaltender interference penalty. It's clear as day. The ref calls it. He's going to the box. He just runs right over UC Saros. And I look up, and I think Matt Duchene is standing there. Roman Josi is standing there. And Dante Fabro is standing there. And guess who the only guy is that does something about their goaltender getting run over? It's Dante Fabro. He takes on like 2 people. Gets taken down by Greenway, lands awkwardly, gets hurt. Now, he did come back to the game, but at the time,
it looked like a lower body. Yeah. Some kind of weird, like, yeah.
And he was limping off the ice, and
You know, I'm not usually big on, you know, why didn't you stand up for something? Like, that's usually not my thing. But I did sit there and wonder, you know, does it say something about this team and this group right now of where they are when your goaltender gets just run over out there and the only guy to do anything about it is your 21-year-old rookie defenseman? Like, yeah. Is that where they are right now?
I think that's fair. And honestly, we talked a lot yesterday about Josi. And his captaincy, which I think I don't think it's fair to criticize him in that way. I think he's doing everything he can, and obviously he's playing well. But that's a situation where you'd like to see him respond. Look, I mean, last year David Poile brought in Cody McLeod, and we were all like, "What? You, really?" But what? Why? Why would you do that? Because of that exact thing. I think there's no one out there who really scares any other teams or deters teams from, you know, from taking shots at your stars.
Yep.
Although I guess at this point it's kind of like, well, just let those guys skate around. They're not doing anything anyway.
Right.
And or doing things like that. And I think they've been searching for someone else. I mean, Brian Boyle, I think, brought a little bit of that last year too.
But even PK, like PK is a guy
true.
That
PK, you're right. Yeah.
You know, when stuff like that started going down. I mean, he's not a guy that I think just imposes fear on people around the league, but he gets in the middle of it.
He'll mix it up.
Yeah.
And he had a sense for, like, this is wrong, and so you have to respond. I mean, it's kind of like the baseball code a little bit, right? Like, I mean, you know, it's the unwritten rules of baseball sometimes. It's like, well, look, this is coming. This is we're buzzing you right now.
Yeah.
In a certain situation. And in hockey, when someone crosses the line, especially with a goaltender – but also, I think sometimes with your you know offensive stars, someone's got to be right there to get in your face. And I think this team, and this is not the first at all instance of where you're kind of like, huh? Is anybody going to get in there and get ticked off?
Yeah, like, it, you know, at the end of the day, is it the biggest deal? No, but it's just something that really kind of stood out to me last night as I watched that play unfold. And you got Dante Fabbro taking on, like, three people. Like, and then people get in there after that, but, like, why is that not happening immediately? That was just something that struck me after that play happened last night that I think maybe symptomatic to where they are mentally right now.
That's a good observation. And also good on Fabbro. You know?
Absolutely,
I mean, it didn't work out well for him. Good to see him get back on the ice, but good on him for having that instinct. Like, get in there and, you know, tell them that's not okay.
And shortly after that, like I said, when that happened, I mean, Fabbro couldn't put any weight on his foot. I mean, he was limping off the ice. He had to be helped off the ice, and you thought, oh, man, that doesn't look good. About 2 or 3 minutes later, Victor Arvidsson takes a slash from Ryan Hartman, and it looked like Ryan Hartman was trying to chop down a tree and lands on his hand. And, I mean, those things happen a lot in the NHL. And I mean, you can easily break your hand on something like that. And you thought to yourself, man, they just lost Fabbro and Arvidsson in like a 3-minute span. Now, luckily, both of those guys were able to come back. So at the end of the day, it's not that big of a deal. Ryan Johansson misses the game last night because of an illness. Seems like they got some illness going around that locker room. Bonino's been out with an illness. Pecorine missed time with an illness. And now Ryan Johansson. And unfortunately, that's one of the things about pro sports, especially when you're around the same group all the time in a somewhat confined space in a locker room. This can be a problem, especially this time of year. I mean, the Predators, they're not the only team that's had to deal with this. But that's one of the things that, especially when you're in a playoff race right now, that's a really unfortunate part of it as well, that, you know, things outside of your control can keep you out of the lineup.
Yeah, and you want to try to get rid of that as quickly as possible. And, of course, you talk about illness. There's, you know, there's some illness talk out there. I'm not tying the two together, but, like, in the NBA, they're talking about, like, don't
high-five
people anymore and stuff. So a lot of focus on that right now. The Preds need to fumigate whatever they need to fumigate and try to get everybody back on as quickly as possible here.
When we come back, the Predators last week started a series of games against teams that are right around them in the standings. Either they're chasing or have been right around them in the wild card race, and it has not gone very well since then. We'll get into what we think that means for this group as we move forward here. You're listening to Morning Drive with Robbie Stanley and Joe Rexroad here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. That was Predators captain Roman Josi after the game last night, a 3-1 loss to the Minnesota Wild. And, Joe, that is kind of the latest instance of a really disappointing stretch of hockey for the Predators. We had a conversation last week. You know, they had beaten Columbus. They had gotten a point in Chicago. They had beaten the Ottawa Senators. But we knew the quality of competition after that was about to step up pretty dramatically in terms of the playoff teams that you were about to go up against. Calgary, Colorado, Edmonton, Minnesota, all four of those teams are either ahead of you or right there with you in terms of the standings in the Western Conference. And they get that big win against Calgary where you tie the game up with a tenth of a second left, you win it in overtime, and you think, okay, you know, didn't play all that great in the game, but a win like that, maybe that type of win and the way you win the game is enough to carry you forward here and start to build a little momentum. And really since then, you know, obviously three losses in a row, all in regulation. You're 1-3 against teams, like we said, that are right there either with you in the playoff race or you're chasing. That doesn't inspire a ton of confidence for me as this group heads forward with some of the teams they're going to have to play coming up, including Dallas twice this week.
No, and you know, it's not like the Calgary game was some vintage performance, but when you win a game like that, you're like, oh, man, you know, maybe there's something – you know, going on with this team. I mean, you think a win like that might be a little bit of a launching point for a team, you know? And instead, I mean, really they've just overall just been outplayed.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not, you know, you can sit here and talk about Pecorine back and forth or what that means and, you know, the embarrassing night for him and all that. But the bottom line is, they've really just looked like the lesser team here in three games in a row. And so we always look at it from the lens of what's wrong with these guys, who's not doing what, and that's all fair. That's, of course, that's how we look at it. Sometimes you got to step back and say, so are we sure that it's just not just that team's just a little bit better than this team?
Yeah.
Kind of looks that way. I still think that this team's wildly erratic. And again, there's all kinds of examples of like, well, what about when they went to Washington? Or what about when they beat St. Louis two games in a row? And sometimes it's matchups and things like that. I still think there's more in this team, but this most recent stretch to me almost feels a little bit like a little bit of a reality check. Like, you know, they don't have a big margin for error. We know that. And they just might not be quite as good as some of these teams that they're competing with.
But the funny part is, like, I think the best team they've played during this past stretch, we would all agree, is the Colorado Avalanche. And I thought, even including the Calgary game, that was by far the best game that they've played. And Jeremy Gover, our friend, writes in and says, you know, they got hosed against Colorado. There's something positive.
That's true.
That's true. They did get hosed against the Colorado Avalanche, but they've lost these games in different ways, right? I mean, you lose the game in Colorado, there's controversy to it. You feel pretty good about the way that you played. Edmonton, I mean, you never really looked like you were in control of that game, but even so, it's 3-3 heading into the third period, right? And you've got a chance on home ice to just win one period and walk away with 2 points in that game. And then you just get obliterated in the third period by Connor McDavid and Leon Draisaitl. And then last night, I mean, your start was just awful in Minnesota. You're down 2-0 before you can really even get into the game. Yeah, I mean, I think you got outshot like 20-7 or something like that to start the game. And to their credit, they turned it around after that, and I think conversely outshot Minnesota like 21-7 right after that. So it was kind of the tale of two different games last night, but you're just, you know, no matter which style of play or how the game goes, they found ways to lose as of late. And as we mentioned, I mean, that matchup against Dallas has absolutely killed them at times this year in terms of just the dominance they've had. I think, you know, it was December 14th they were here at Bridgestone Arena, won that game, I think 4-1, scored four goals in the second period. And after the Predators jumped out to a lead in the Winter Classic, I mean, Dallas just totally dominated that game. I know both of those games happened under Peter Laviolette's watch, but you go back to the playoffs last year, like, if you're the Predators, you can't feel great right now about that matchup with Dallas. At least I wouldn't think so.
Right. Darn it. Button issue.
You hadn't done it in a while.
Yeah, it's been a while for me. Yeah, no, you can't. But, hey, you know what? It's also, I mean, it's an opportunity, and it's one of those things where, like, this team has been, if you're the Preds, you look at it like this team has been manhandling us going back to last spring. So, you know, what are you going to do about it? The Stars have lost three in a row coming right at this point.
Which to me, though, that almost makes them more dangerous. I'm like, yeah. Man, like, wouldn't you rather, if you're a Predators fan, having them won like five or six in a row just to be like, all right, they're due for a loss here coming up. That would make me feel worse, I think, just based on the way this season has gone for the Predators and how they've responded to that. It's just, it's tough, man.
Well, you know, they have to, I mean, look, this is, you know, Thursday, massive game at home, and then you get, you know, you get a day between and you're going to Dallas Saturday, and that is the first of five straight on the road. I mean, look, maybe it's better. I mean, this team has a better road record, but you're talking about Montreal, Toronto, Columbus, and then you're winding back to Minnesota before coming home with Colorado again. I mean, it's big, big game after big game, which, one, means there's tons of opportunity. Things could look so different one way or the other soon enough. But, two, like right now, I just don't feel like this team is playing well enough to feel great about them going into this stretch. You know, but, again, it's swings back and forth with this team. And it's very much like who knows what you're going to get in a particular game. You know, the bottom line is they've got to, as we've talked about over and over and over again, they've got to get those main guys going. They got to get Ryan Johansson back on the ice.
Yeah, healthy.
That would help. We rip on Ryan Johansson, but you know, there's no question he's essential to this team. And they've got to find another spark. I really thought that they kind of had a feeling going, not that a feeling is going to carry you through a tough matchup in this league on any given night.
Right.
But now it's like the intangibles have gone the other way. It feels that way. I mean, last night I just never really got the sense that once it became 2-0, you know, that they were really going to make a push in that game.
No, I didn't either. And, you know, Chris Mason talked about it a little bit on the television broadcast last night. Like, you got to get to the net. Like, some of these chances they were throwing at Stalock last night, I mean, I don't want to say they were wasted shots because I guess you always have a chance of going in if you put it on net. But, you know, when you're shooting the puck from the point and there's not a soul within, you know, 7 feet of the goal crease, I mean, I can make that save. Like, you're not going to score on those opportunities with any sort of regularity whatsoever.
And that's something Hines preaches.
He's trying to get people to get to the middle of the ice more. And I just hadn't seen a whole lot of that as of late. Duchesne did it a couple times last night and had some good looks, but I just haven't seen a ton of it. And our friend Pred Kelly on Twitter writes in and says, the Preds have been and are just an average team for over a year. It's baffling as to why, with the talent on paper. I'd be rich if I could figure out why, but we the fans need to just come to grips with it. I did a long time ago. And, you know, I think I've been hesitant to, I guess, say that and say that they're an average team because I know what the talent is. I've seen it. I've seen these guys do it together. But he's right. I mean, you look at the record that they have for really over a calendar year now, and it's basically right at 500. I mean, that's... And the why, I think, is what we as media and what the fan base and even David Poile, I think they're all trying to figure out why that is. And I'm not sure anybody has an answer for that right now.
Yeah, well, I mean, look, if you have the four guys we talk about all the time, if you have four guys you lean on that heavily who are all underproducing, you know, underproducing relative to what they've done, then there's one big why. Now, why that's happening, that's a deeper question. And, you know, the goaltending has gotten better recently, but this year, certainly, that's a big part of this too, right?
But even last year, like, you know, in the second half of last season, when they're heading into the playoffs, you know, Arvidsson's productive, Johansson's productive, Forsberg's productive, and they were still about right at 500 last year in the second half of the season.
Yeah, that's
You know,
true.
It's just, it's one of those things where you look at it and, to me, I kind of describe it this way. It's, you know, and Matt Duchesne talked about this to me a couple weeks ago. It's like when you plug one hole in the barrel, another one just pops right open and water starts leaking from that one. They haven't quite been able to get everything figured out together at the same time. When they were scoring goals earlier this year, the goaltending wasn't all that great. When the goaltending's been great as of late,
they hadn't been able to score a whole lot. Like, they just – special teams. They hadn't been able to figure that out all year. I mean, it's just – they can't put every aspect of their game together with any sort of consistency whatsoever.
Yeah, well, and think back to a year ago. One, power play. That's all we're talking about. Yeah. Power play, power play, power play. But also – you know, you mentioned those guys being productive, but Turris not being productive, getting healthy, scratched. Granlund coming in, and, you know, again, to be fair to Granlund, it doesn't always work immediately, but he didn't do much coming in, right? And then you go into the playoffs, and even though those guys had been productive, what'd they do in the playoff against the Stars? Rocco Grimaldi was the one forward who really did anything in that series.
Yeah.
And that's, again, beyond the – I mean, it's beyond now because – they would be thrilled to get there at this point. But that's the next question if they do is, are these forwards going to step up in the playoffs? I suspect at least one or two of them are going to have to step up for them to get there.
Oh, there's no question about that. And we talked about this last week. Like, I think it's probably naive at this point to expect all four of these guys just to figure it out at the same time this year because, I mean, if that was going to happen, wouldn't we have started to see signs of that by now? I think if you're a Predators fan, you probably have to be happy if you get two of those guys to get out of this funk that they're in and play up to their potential. You're probably happy with that at this point.
I'd like to know how many fans feel like at Pred Kelly, and I've heard it a lot. I've heard basically almost like resignation, which is, I mean, in a way, I guess, you know, you sort of have to adjust your expectations. They were so high for this group after the 17 run, and then they backed it up the whole next year till they got to Winnipeg. You know, but that's a seven-game second-round series. But the expectations stayed there, and now they've slowly crept down.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of people feel exactly that way. So the question is, can you hang in there and, you know, just be happy if this team gets in at this point?
Yeah, no, I think that's going to be tough to do. When we come back, two games coming up this week against the Dallas Stars. Why has Dallas specifically had so much success against the Predators, not only this year, but going back to last year's playoffs? And do the Predators have what it takes to overcome that this week in what's going to be a monumental back-to-back set of games for them against the Stars? We'll get into that next. You're listening to Morning Drive with Robbie Stanley and Joe Rexroad here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Big game tomorrow night as the Preds face off against the Dallas Stars at Bridgestone Arena. It's an NHL Winter Classic rematch and a potential playoff matchup. Purchase tickets now and receive a Preds camo hat. Pre-game will begin tomorrow night at 6 o'clock here on 102.5 The Game, and the puck drops at 7 p.m. Welcome back into Morning Drive with Robbie Stanley and Joe Rexroad here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Joe, two huge games coming up this week against the Dallas Stars. First tomorrow night here in Nashville, and then on Saturday deep in the heart of Texas in Dallas, a afternoon game, 1 o'clock. Love those. Those are my favorite. Afternoon hockey, it's hard to beat.
Absolutely. Make them all 1 o'clock.
Oh, I'd be 100% for it. But you're going up against a team in Dallas who you're 0-2 against this year. You think back to the playoff series last year, you lose in 6 games. Quite frankly, when you dissect that playoff series, they were probably lucky to push it to 6 games last year. Rene absolutely stole one in Game 3. You win Game 2 in overtime. But Dallas, it really just felt like, was in control of that series the entire time. Why do we feel like Dallas has been able to have so much success against the Predators in their matchups as of late? Obviously, we know Dallas is very talented, but you look at the talent on paper anyway, and it seems relatively even. Why has Dallas had the edge so much?
Well, I mean, the short answer for me is that one line that the Preds couldn't handle, certainly in the playoffs last year, right? And just overall physicality, too. I mean, I think that, you know, there's a couple plays that stand out from the, you know, the Ryan Ellis, of course. You know,
Jamie Benn.
You know, Jamie Benn throwing him aside and scoring, or threw him aside and scored, or threw him aside and
set it up.
But I think the physicality, I mean, in that series, again, Rocco Grimaldi made things happen. But it felt like everybody else was just silenced, just muzzled. And so I think physicality and size is a big part of it. You know, Dallas is, Jamie, really those guys, Sagan, Ben, Radulov, they're not having great years.
No.
I mean, really... it's somewhat disappointing on that end. Their goaltending's been fantastic. It's almost like they've changed a little bit, and like into more of a defensive team. But that's still a tough group to deal with. And I don't know. That's the short answer for me. Is just at times they look like they are physically overmatched against that team.
I think one of the biggest things, and to your point, this feeds exactly into this, that I've noticed in the matchup against the Stars, it's so hard for them to get to the middle of the ice, get to those areas against the Stars. Like, they do such a good job of keeping things to the perimeter. Sure, you get your chances every now and then with speed that you're able to generate. I think that's a big reason why Rocco Grimaldi was so successful against the Stars last season, because he had the speed to get there and beat them around the edge sometimes. But really, for the most part, it's been really difficult for the Predators to do that against the Stars. And to your point, Joe, it's been kind of fascinating to watch the Stars transition from kind of this run-and-gun team where Sagan and Benn are putting up, 80, 90 points every season. I mean, Jamie Benn won the Art Ross Trophy for the highest score in the league a few years ago. And now you look at their stats. I mean, Sagan's got 50 points, 17 goals. You would expect a lot more goals from Tyler Sagan. Jamie Benn, 19 goals. Radulov, 15 goals. Like, nobody really jumps out at you offensively. But they have turned in to one of the most stingy teams in the league defensively. I mean, Miro Heiskanen is there. Esa Lindell, John Klingberg, their goaltending, Bishop and Hudobin, like, they've almost done a 180-degree identity shift in the last 3 to 4 years. And for whatever reason, the Predators just can't generate a whole lot against that team. So that's got to be the challenge as you look ahead this week for the Predators. Okay, we haven't been able to generate a ton of offense against this group. How do we get to the middle of the ice? What do we have to do to get there to get those quality chances? We feel like maybe the quantity hasn't been the same since Hines took over, but the quality has been better for the most part, probably until the last 4 or 5 games or so, the quality has been better. But that's got to change. Like, you got to find a way to get there this week, or it's going to be tough sledding again against this team.
Like, a guy like Nick Bonino will get there, right? But there are other guys who can and have to. And like you said, I mean, Hines stresses that, and like that didn't look like what a team that stresses that last night to me.
No.
Right? I mean, to your point earlier, they threw up a lot of stuff at the net that just, and then it's one and done, and there's really nothing. I mean, you've got to figure out a way. You've got to get there, and you've got to bury some of these chances too. So, yeah, that is the challenge. I'm going to be interested too, Robbie. Like Bridgestone, I feel like they kind of got it back in terms of the atmosphere. And now you've got this losing streak. What is Bridgestone like Thursday night?
I mean, is there an uneasiness about it?
Yeah. Does that return? Because obviously the last time these fans, and again, I thought it was a great atmosphere the other night, and then you sit there and watch Edmonton put 8 on your team. So, but the Preds need that atmosphere to be a part of this down the stretch too. Then they need to feed it. And I thought that they kind of had it turned, and now we'll see if it's turned back the other way.
But doesn't, like, at some point, like, the pride as a professional athlete, like, doesn't that have to kick in? Like, this team has totally manhandled you for the last calendar year. There's not been much you've been able to do about it. You're in a playoff race right now. You just got embarrassed at home the last time you were there. Like, you would think at some point, like, the pride factor of this has got to kick in, right? Like, to be honest with you, the fact that just from our outside vantage point, it seems like it hasn't as of yet, to me, that's deeply concerning. Like, you would think that would have already happened at this point.
Yeah, and I mean, that's another one of those things that, like, I put with effort. Because I think it's easy to go there and be like, oh, they didn't play hard. And I think a lot of times it's not playing hard, but there's something beyond playing hard, right? John Hines talks about that all the time, like individual puck battles and all that stuff. Yeah, I would think so. I think they, I mean, even just off the ice, before games or after games, I think these guys are very frustrated. Like, you go to a Preds, now there aren't a lot of guys around, but guys walking around or whatever after a loss, guys are ticked off. It's not like people are playing music and like, oh, everything's fine. Like, I think this team's really collectively frustrated.
Yeah.
And has those feelings. And I'm sure they're sick of hearing about all their underachieving. So, like, I think that's there. It's just a matter of then how do you translate that? And I'm going to go back to some of these games. I'm not seeing a team that I think is necessarily better than the other team that's underachieving. And sometimes I'm like, that team just looks a little bit better than them.
Yeah.
And so then it's like the talent, this talent level that we've talked about. This is such a talented team. I think so, too, on paper. But
does that start to get called into question, though?
Yeah, a little bit.
The more we go along here.
I mean, a little bit. And some of it is maybe some guys getting older, although
they're not old.
Like, that's the problem. I mean, they're in what should be their prime. So does it get to guys are all paid now when they weren't paid a few years ago? Yeah, I mean, it's fair to look at that.
You have to start to wonder. And David Poyle's talked about that a little bit. I remember when they had the press conference after Peter Laviolette had been fired, John Hines was fired or was hired. I think Jared Stillman was the one that asked him, like, you know, how much of a concern is it that, you know, maybe some of these guys are, for lack of a better term, fat and happy with their contracts? And David Poyle's answer to that was, you know, that absolutely could be a concern, and if I find out that's the case, I'm going to do everything I can possibly do to make them uncomfortable. I still don't know if I'm quite there yet that that's it, but, you know, if you get through this offseason and maybe they don't make the playoffs and David Poyle does some soul searching and figures out that maybe that's part of it, that goes back to a conversation we had earlier this week. This team's going to look a lot different.
Yeah.
I mean, it has to at that point.
As different as he could make it. Well, like Ryan Ellis's example, like last year, I heard some of that and from Mr. Stillman, by the way, and I never bought that. And I still don't. I don't, like last year, I think Ryan Ellis was hurt.
Yeah.
I think Ryan Ellis puts it out there every night and he's got a lot of pride and I think he's playing well.
Yeah.
And he got paid a lot. So he's an example. Like, you have to go case by case.
Like Roman Josi,
He's going to be a finalist for the Norris. Some of these forwards, though, I'm not saying that's what it is. I don't know. But certainly if you're a GM, it's going to cross your mind probably a lot these days.
Absolutely. When we come back, a former NFL coach doesn't think Tom Brady to the Titans makes any sense whatsoever. We'll get into that. You're listening to Morning Drive live from the Wholesaling Studio, powered by RumAlone.com with Robbie Stanley and Joe Rexroad here on ESPN 102.5 The Game.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Another checkered flag for the books. Time to celebrate with Chumba. Jump in at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. CTNCs 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks. Like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit Dick's.com/scorecardplus for details.